Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Marcus Nispel's 2011 film, Conan the Barbarian. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, can you run that director's name by me one more time?
I believe it's Marcus Nispel? Nispel? N-I-S-P-E-L?
Is that Nispelled?
Ba-doom-ba. Nice.
That was pretty awful. Thank you, though.
That is the kind of comedy that you people can expect for the entirety of the rest of this episode. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. Tyler, I have the character name game for you this week. Are you ready?
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
Okay, it is Mia Thermopolis. Mia Thermopolis. So you have to...
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
No, it is not. It's not that.
It's the second one. My other Big Fat Greek Wedding.
No, it's not. You have to keep in mind that this has to be some sort of connection between what movie this character is from and a movie that came out in theaters this past week. So we'll come back and you can try to guess what movie Mia Thermopolis is from a little bit later on. In the meantime, let's transition into the media consume section.
Oh, the answer. Okay.
Go ahead. We'll wait. Just wait until the end. Keep your pants on.
Oh, they're already off, brother.
All right, that's what I'm talking about. Proper podcasting etiquette right there. It's podcasting 101.
Yeah.
Pants. Let's talk about media consumed. This is the part where we mention shows we've been watching or movies we've seen recently, events we've been to, things like that. Tyler, what have you been consuming this past week?
I'm pretty stoked, dude, because... this is the last episode we're not going to be in the same room together for.
That is true.
Next two episodes are going to be fucking live.
all right. Visiting Los Angeles, so yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tyler of NJNM fame will be visiting the City of Angels in California, I believe, the state out there.
Yeah, something like that. State.
There's some vineyards over there. Can I, are there any vineyards for sale that I could buy up and maybe start a little business?
Napa Valley? I don't know. That's a little ways from here, but anyway.
Wait, is Napa Valley just one big vineyard?
I don't know.
Run up there?
All I know of wine Bain, talk...
Does Bain control that place?
I just know it from The Parent Trap. That's the extent of my knowledge of wineries and things of that
Ladies
sort.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Pearson, Master Sommelier. a couple of things I've been taking advantage of. Man, I don't even know which one to start with. Go over to the solarsentinel.blogspot.com. You'll find episode one of this fairly humorous animated internet series called Duralius and Associates. Ben, have you checked this out yet?
No, I have not seen
it. Ben, do you even read my blog?
I do, occasionally.
Okay, good. You saved yourself. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, check this out. It's pretty funny. It's along the same lines... I don't know, like, I talk about that clock suckers and kind of those dorkly videos. I sometimes maybe talk about, you know, Sonic for Hire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not those guys, but it's similar. It's a kind of a web cartoon. And I guess, and I just found this out with episode one, that they have like 36 episodes already, but they're re-releasing them to create a new following, to create a bigger following so that they can basically kickstart something and make more money so that they can continue with the series.
Okay.
So, yeah, pretty cool. I guess they're re-releasing them one a week, and I posted the first one on my blog just because I thought it was funny.
So what's the general...
Oh, yeah, maybe I should talk about the plot. Yeah. he's a knight, and he tries to set up like a team of heroes, and, you know, he gets a ragtag group of people together, and they're, like, discussing... how successful they might be and like what they need. And he's like, all right, finally our first day is Duralius and Associates. And they're like, wait, is this the grand opening? Cause we're not really ready yet. And he's like, no, it's kind of a soft opening. You know, we're ready to go. We just haven't like become focused on it yet.
Uh-huh.
And, there's one knight named Sir Walken, who's obviously based off of Christopher Walken. I hope he's heavily featured throughout the series. And, you know, just kind of, very dry jokes and some, you know, not great animation, but kind of that funny, shoddy animation that Flash animation kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Very how it should have ended. If you are a big fan of How It Should Have Ended, that video series, it's similar to that too.
Nice.
Other things I've been checking out: Raw 1000, the 1000th episode of Monday Night Raw. And Ben, I know you know what I'm talking about here.
I barely know what you're talking about.
Whatever, dude. Closet fan right here. And they brought all the stars out last night. DX reunited. You're a honorary member of Degeneration X. If anyone's ever read Ben P's exploits at the Plainfield / Destageddon,
right?
Big fans of that. They brought out the whole crew. You weren't there, Ben.
No, I wasn't.
Kind of sad. Maybe you guys have fallen out of, had a falling out after the asteroid hit. Spoiler alert.
I believe I'm only associated with this wrestling troupe in your own imagination, not in real life.
Not only mine, Ben. In like 4 to 5 people's imaginations.
Okay, all right.
Including yours. And, the Rock was there. Some other old guys were there. It was pretty fun.
Was Hulk Hogan there?
No, he wasn't. He's not with that company anymore.
Okay, all right.
But it was 3 hours long, which is kind of long. But, we just waited a half hour and then skipped through all the commercials. So,
yeah.
Screw you, commercial bias.
But the 1000th episode of something?
Yeah,
that's gotta be
It's been on since like 1993, and it's been a new episode every week since then.
That is an incredible benchmark, regardless of the content, I think.
Yeah, like Panther Joe, friend and colleague of the show, he said, "When are we ever going to see the 1000th episode of any show ever?"
Yeah.
Again, and I was like, "Yeah, that's probably true. We should probably check this out."
I mean, what do you know? What number episode The Simpsons are on at this point? Because that's like one of the longest running, or I think it's the longest running sitcom, even though it's animated. But
I think they just had their 100th episode, perhaps. I meant 500th episode.
Okay.
I think I'm not sure. They hit a landmark this season, I think. And I think it was 500. It might have been 1000. I don't know.
Wow.
Where's our intern? Where's Dave? We need to double check that.
Seriously.
I'm not doing it. And yeah, a couple of cool matches.
Okay. What was your favorite?
Rock came out. What was my favorite?
That's favorite part.
Let me think back. Oh God, you put me on the spot. freaking A. There's this one guy named Kane, who again you may be associated with, Ben. Dust against that. He's kind of like a bald, old looking guy. He came out and was like. Joe calls him Tulsa Welding School Kane because he wears like this metal mask wherever he goes.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of a sudden, like six just D-bags that are never on the show, they come out and they're like, "You guys have forgotten about us for far too long, so we're just going to kick Kane's ass." And so they like rush the ring, and then the Undertaker comes out of nowhere and joins his in-character brother to fight all those guys off, and it takes like 5 seconds, so it was pretty cool because the Undertaker never shows up anymore.
Okay, all right.
Like a special, kind of like a special treat to see him on television.
Nice.
I think he might be dead.
Okay.
So always good to see a dead man walking.
Right.
So yeah, check it out. It might be on illegally on YouTube. Somebody usually that's how I watch the show. Instead of stuffing up my DVR, I just watch somebody's YouTube. Taping of it in its entirety on, so just type in Raw 1000.
Yeah, you probably should do that quickly before YouTube gets around to pulling it down off the internet. So,
the internet. And finally, I've been checking out the retro comics of Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, okay.
In preparation for this episode, and I've been reading these for like 6 months, so way in preparation.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s, I guess they got the rights to the old Robert E. Howard character and started kind of coming up with their own stories. A couple of them were based on actual stories from Robert E. Howard. Others were just kind of creatively written by the author.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Stevens? Roy somebody. His name's Roy. First name Roy.
Okay.
Again, Dave, look that up. We need a researcher on this show. And this was before the movies. This was before the Arnold movie. So kind of cool. All comics from the 70s are kind of cool. if you think about it, because it has like nudity and violence, things like this, kind of outside of the 60s happy-go-lucky era of comic books.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm probably offending some fans. I don't know. I'm not a historian. Bite me. But yeah, it's they have like, I think it ran from 1974 to 1995, and it's collected in like 11 volumes.
Okay.
The first one. And so far, pretty good. Pretty exciting.
All right.
It's good stuff. It's I like the architecture. I like the places that don't really exist. I like that he just kills everybody and then basically lays up on the women. It's your general. If you love Conan the Barbarian, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Conan the Destroyer, Arnold Schwarzenegger, maybe even Conan the Barbarian 2011.
Yeah.
You'd probably like the Savage Sword of Conan.
Okay. Check it out. All right. I'm just now getting a message here from Dave, and apparently The Simpsons has broadcast 508 episodes so
far. There you go.
So.
Nice job, Dave.
They're in their 23rd season at this point, I believe. So.
They stole one of my ideas.
The Chimpsons? Yeah, the Chimpson Gate. I think that was last week's episode. So.
Chimpson Gate, yeah. 508 episodes, 23 seasons, one stolen joke.
Right. Which is pretty good when you think about it.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay. Well, for me, the only real movie that I got a chance to watch that wasn't a press screening this week was The Help. Have you seen this, Tyler?
No.
Okay.
Nor do I care to.
Okay. I'd heard it was good. It's pretty decent. I think, it's like a very contained drama. It's got, you know, it relies more on like solid performances and good writing than anything else. It's certainly not something you're going to watch for like the cinematography or the
right.
Whatever, anything like that. Very few explosions, a disappointingly few amount of explosions.
That's really what doesn't get that's what get me. That's what gets me in the seats, people.
Yeah. But no, I thought it was good. I think Emma Stone was really solid. Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer were both really good. Jessica Chastain, I think, you know, this was one of the movies that kind of put her on the map last year when it came out. I think she was in something like 6 theatrical movies last year, in the 2011 calendar year, which is pretty absurd. And Bryce Dallas Howard.
Not enough movies?
I mean, I think that's enough for anyone.
I would be in a movie like every day if I could.
Bryce Dallas Howard, who I know you're a fan of, Tyler, and I am as well. She plays.
She has like her 5 kids.
She plays a massive bitch in this movie, and it's pretty entertaining to watch. So, yeah, I mean, I would say if you guys haven't checked it out, I just never got around to it. I know there's a ton of hype around it. I believe it was up for Best Picture last year. And it won Best Supporting Actress for, who was that? I think Viola Davis was
Monique.
Who won. No, that was Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire a couple of years ago. In any case, The Help, pretty solid. Check it out if you haven't seen it. So that was the thing that I watched in its entirety. 2 things that I watched partially because they were both so bad I couldn't finish them.
Nice.
One of which, Tyler, you might be disappointed in this, is The Captains. It's a 2011 documentary directed by William Shatner.
I started that too, didn't finish it.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm glad that you, being the bigger Shatner fan among
freaking
us,
boring.
It was terrible.
Hey, wait, let me do my Shatner in a second. Patrick Stewart, talk to me about the theater.
Content.
Basically right? That.
I don't know about the impression, but basically The Captains came out in 2011 on like very, very wide release. It might have even gone like VOD or something. But William Shatner, of course, famous for popularizing the character of James T. Kirk back in the original Star Trek TV series and then on into the movies. Tyler and I actually reviewed all of the first series of the Star Trek movies at Not Just New Movies. You can go back in the archives and find those if you like. But the premise of the documentary is that Shatner follows around a bunch or has interviews with a bunch of other actors who have played captains in the various incarnations of Star Trek, which to me kind of sounded like a vaguely interesting premise. Like,
yeah.
Go to these guys and there's one female, I believe, Avery Brooks, I think. Wait,
and
no.
She was the captain on Voyager.
No, Kate Mulgrew, maybe? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Avery Brooks.
I don't know which shows they were on.
Avery Brooks is a dude. Sorry about that.
Is that the Deep Space Nine guy?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Isn't Scott Bakula one of the captains?
Yes, and yes, Avery Brooks.
Aren't they riding horses at that point?
Is the Deep Space Nine guy. Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. So okay. It seems like kind of an interesting thing. You know, you approach these people later in their lives, like post-Star Trek, and you ask them all sorts of questions about how the property has changed their lives and what it's meant to them, and kind of, you know, the intense fandom that's around Star Trek, which arguably, you know, kind of started the intense fandom that is popularized now and stuff like Comic-Con and things like that. It seems like kind of a cool concept for a documentary, but Shatner just flubs it up beyond anything that you could imagine. He, of course, makes everything about him, and he's a terrible interviewer, first of all. I mean, Tyler, I think you talked a long time ago about how he had a show, like an interview show.
Yeah, Shatner's Raw Nerve.
Right, I think you might have discussed a couple episodes of that, like, way back in the early days of this podcast. But he is just a god-awful interviewer. He doesn't let people finish their sentences. He's always grabbing them weirdly and like, demanding what he thinks
there's something on the plane.
What he thinks is clarification, but is actually just them finishing their thought. and he's really abrasive, and it's tough to watch. So I don't know. We gave this movie probably 30 minutes or something, and then I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I've kind of prided myself recently on the fact that I try not to stop a movie once I've started it. So this is a really strange week in the fact that I stopped The Captains and this next movie I'm going to talk about, which is a Monopoly documentary called Under the Boardwalk, the Monopoly story. Yeah.
Joe was just telling me how great that was.
No way.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
He said he really dug it because, yeah, go ahead and tell the people the plot.
Okay, so it came out in 2010. Zachary Levi narrates the documentary, and it's basically like it follows a group of like world champion Monopoly players. Yes, apparently there are such a thing. And they, you know, it kind of, it traces their paths to victory or otherwise in these various tournaments and stuff. This one we gave even less, probably only like 20, 25 minutes before we had to turn it off because it was terrible. Like, I was kind of expecting it to be like, it's called Under the Boardwalk, the Monopoly story. I was thinking like, okay, this is going to be about the history of the game itself and like how the game has changed and transitioned through the years, and like maybe interview, I don't know, famous people instead of like these
Mr. Moneybags.
Yeah.
Whatever his name is.
Or like, you know, interview the guy that he was based on, or like a relative of the guy he was based on, or something.
His great grandson.
And, you know, honestly, for all I know, they might have done that later in the documentary, but we just turned it off because they spent the first like 20 or 30 minutes just following these, I don't want to say weird, because everybody has their own thing, and I'm not going to like call somebody out for playing Monopoly quote unquote professionally. But these people who just play the game like in championship tournaments and stuff. And that's not really what I was looking for. But you go ahead, Tyler. Tell me what Joe was telling you about it, because I've never heard of anybody who's even heard of this before, let alone somebody else who's seen it.
I think maybe he was more interested in the niche and the kind of the not the originality, but kind of the the exclusiveness of a documentary just revolving around one particular board game.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big fan of documentaries, so I think that's why he was kind of drawn to it.
Yeah.
The more specific, the better, I think, for your brother Joe. And I think I might check it out because I dig a good documentary every once in a while. You know, The King of Kong or the other one with Billy Mitchell in it that I watched recently. There's a pinball one I want to watch. That one might suck, but whatever.
Yeah, I added that to my queue recently.
Like the pinball light or something about the lights are on or the lights are out or something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of documentaries as well, but when this movie spends like, you know, 4 or 5 minutes explaining the rules of Monopoly up front at the top, it's like, really, somebody who's watching the Monopoly story probably knows how to play Monopoly, but
I don't know. There's some twists and turns that I wasn't even aware of. But apparently Joe was saying that the winner of these tournaments actually gets like the amount of money that you can find in the bills in the game.
Right. Yeah. Which actually
so it's
isn't
like
even that much.
$25,000, $307 or something.
Yeah, it's something relatively small. It's under $50,000, which is like it yeah. seems like a waste of time for that little money to try to, you know,
probably spend that much money like just trying to sustain yourself in the tournament without
right.
like, working at your job or
right.
anything.
Exactly.
You're feeding your family and you're like out on the Monopoly game tour.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, that both of those documentaries, The Captains and Under the Boardwalk, are available on Netflix. Watch instantly if for some strange reason you'd like to check them out. I don't know, do it. Maybe if you're a better or more
strong-willed.
Yeah, strong-willed film goer than I am. Maybe you can finish them and then shoot us an email and let us know how it turned out and maybe if I was wrong to quit it too early. So you can do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. So Tyler, I guess unless we have anything else, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Conan the Barbarian 2011.
Woo. I see a journey. A man
crossing the sands.
A knight.
A warrior. Your paths will merge.
Behold! In despair! Your new master.
Kala raises the souls of the unspeakably evil.
You are sought to enslave all of Hyboria.
No man shall live in chains.
All right, so Conan the Barbarian, obviously, since I just said it, came out in 2011. It stars Jason Momoa, Rachel Nichols, Rose McGowan, Stephen Lang, and directed by Marcus Nispel, who I believe is a music video director primarily. He also did the remake of, was it Friday the 13th? Yes, Friday the 13th in 2009. So, he also did the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 2003. So this dude is all about remakes, apparently.
This wasn't actually a remake, though, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
I mean, same title, but different plot.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
it's like
Tyler,
a new adventure, I guess.
You're the Conan expert, I would say. Among
not really.
Well, between you and I, definitely.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah, I'll take
so
that.
So, why don't you tell me what you thought about this movie? I remember you speaking about it briefly on a previous episode, but
yeah.
Why don't you refresh?
I have a question
memory.
For you, Ben. When you when you're forging a blade, do you use fire or ice?
Yeah, that was such a cheap question. He's like, fire, ice? No, it's both.
He's like, you can't answer twice. I'm going to chop your head off. Yeah, I mean, when I went and saw it in theaters, I think I saw it in 3D.
Yeah.
And when you have seen the old Conan movies, you're not expecting a lot. This isn't going to be your, I don't know, insert epic movie here. I don't want to give any props to any movies ever. I was going to say Black Swan, but that movie sucked. So it's not going to be this epic, like dramatic thing that everyone is going to love. It's a very niche audience, very much like the Monopoly documentary. You got to find your audience. You got to find the people that don't really care about acting. They don't really care about, drama. They want to see action. They want to see boobies. They want to see possibly some people getting killed and grotesque ways. This is the audience you're looking for. Heads are rolling. Landscapes are being traveled. like it's kind of like a mix. And I thought for sure you'd like it, Ben, because you majored in mythology.
Right. minored in mythology, but yeah, go ahead.
PhD in mythology. Right. Dr. Mythos here. And it's you know, Conan's kind of a melding of this these ideas, like they're gods, but everyone has different gods, and so Conan has like Crom, and he'll go into another place that has like another god, and he's like, oh, your god blows, my god's awesome, and we're just gonna fight each other until something happens.
But that, I think
it's a cool little world, I guess.
I think you're bringing that, the religious aspect into it from the comics and stuff that you've been reading, because I didn't really get a lot of that in the movie itself. Like, there's not really...
I mean, there's like the whole Sumerian culture, I think, worships the blade, they said. And in the comics, he worships... Well, he doesn't really worship. He just kind of follows Crom, which is this just warlike, this warrior-like god.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, yeah, it's not too heavily featured in the movie, definitely not.
Yeah.
But it, like I said, interesting world. Adventures can take place, like, literally, figuratively, whatever. Anything can happen in this place. Like, Conan could end this adventure, and then he rides off, and then something else will happen. Like, it's just brewing with excitement and different characters and different things and people and... I don't know. It's kind of cool.
I agree that I think maybe the world building is probably the most enjoyable part of the movie, because it seemed like every 5 minutes they were just transitioning to an establishing shot of a new ridiculously named city that I didn't couldn't pronounce.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, after a while, like, you know, after they do that like two or three times, I'm like, okay, whatever. This is grating on me a little bit, but by the time the movie ends, they've done it like 8 or 9 times, it seems like. So it kind of just like, much like the titular hero, just like bashes you in to like,
ooh,
being like just complacent with it or content with it, I guess. Like, you kind of are like, all right, I understand what's going on here. All of the cities looked, you know, satisfyingly different enough from one another to kind of, yeah, like, put yourself in a place, this fantasy world. Kind of like, it reminded me a little bit of like Fire and Ice, that movie, that kind of rotoscoped film that you and I had discussed a few episodes ago. And, you know, I think I like something like Fire and Ice a little bit better than this movie, because I don't really think this movie is executed very well. Like, they have a lot of very simple ideas, and it's stuff that we've seen a million times before. I mean, talk about...
That's the beauty of the sword and sorcery genre, Ben. You can see the same thing over and over again and still have a pretty good time.
You know,
Red Sonja, awful. Did I watch it? Yes. Am I going to watch it again? Probably not.
I'm kind of torn about that concept, because I think on one hand you're right. Like, you know, it's a basic story. There's something to be said for that. You know, you have a story that's paper thin, and then you leave it up to the casting and the director and the kind of style that he or she can apply to this story and how they can kind of twist it around and make it their own. And that's fine. But for on the other hand, when you have a movie like Conan the Barbarian 2012, and it just...
2011.
Or, I'm sorry, yes, 2011. And it takes so heavily from all these other things that we've seen before without really adding any particular... I'm not going to say any style whatsoever, because the movie definitely has a style to it, but it's not necessarily a great style. It's not something that's memorable. It's not something that stands out from any other sword and sorcery movies that we've seen. I feel like once you have, if you have a kind of a blank slate like you do with a story like this, you want to do something to stand out and do something new and interesting with it, even if the story is bland and predictable. And I don't necessarily think that this movie did that. I think Jason Momoa was decent as Conan, before we go any further, I wrote this down. Is it Conan or Conan? Because...
I think either one works.
Does it? Because I thought that, like, specifically in the Schwarzenegger movies, he was referred to as Conan. And then, like, Conan O'Brien has made jokes about how that's not how you pronounce his name. Because I thought they were, like,
right,
they were exclusive, like, there's one and then there's the other. But this movie, it's like
maybe it depends on which part of Hyperborea you're from.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if you had any insight into that.
Definitely no.
I'll assume no.
Yeah, I mean, like if you look at it, and it's kind of brought it up, I guess a little bit. It was like looking at the James Bond films. I mean, not the recent ones, like the ones that came out in like the 70s and 80s and 90s. It was like the same kind of structure to the film. Like something happens, Bond goes out, gets some gadgets, bangs some women, stuff happens, end of movie. And people kind of talk about like their favorite Bond films or whatever, and they go, oh yeah, that one was good, or that one was bad. Mm-hmm. If you look at this, it's kind of the same thing, like the spy thriller genre, sword and sorcery genre. And these are very kind of hyper-specific, oh, not hyper-specific, that would be like just Conan, you know, by himself.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of these really specific genres where it's, you know, you can't, you know, you can work in other aspects, but really there's only a few things you're looking for in the film. And I understand your point with kind of making it its own, but really it's a Conan the Barbarian movie. It's not like a new character. I mean, if you're coming up with a new character, you want to sell it, so you make it different. You make it unique in some way.
Yeah.
Conan the Barbarian, everyone knows what Conan the Barbarian does. He's a brute. He's smart, but he's a brute. He cuts people's heads off and he bangs girls and he goes on adventures. That's all you really need. I don't know. I think the simplicity allows us to kind of enjoy the movie and we don't have to think about anything. And again, the escapism kind of applies to it as well.
But I think like you just mentioned, Bond is a great example of that. So if you look at Die Another Day and then you look at Casino Royale.
Oh, God. Why would you even mention that one?
Because it's a good example. Like Die Another Day is like a death blow to the Bond universe. But it's about the same thing, right? It's about a super spy. Stuff happens to him. He bangs some girls. He gets some gadgets. Chase scene, whatever, end of movie. But then, and the same thing could be said about Casino Royale, those same kind of plot points. But that movie had so much style to it and just completely reinvented it, even though it's the same character. I feel like there's something you could do with a Conan the Barbarian movie to make it, to like inject a little bit of life into it. This movie just felt kind of dead on arrival, if that makes any sense. I don't know. I mean, there are elements to it that I enjoyed. I liked, like I said, the casting. I thought Jason Momoa was pretty decent as the, you know, this kind of hulking guy. He's a pretty simple character, and it's not like he's really being asked to do a lot, but I thought he was good. I thought Rachel Nichols was really nice to look at. I thought Rose McGowan was appropriately over the top for a sorceress, because that's kind of a stock character in this genre. And Stephen Lang was, you know, Stephen Lang. He plays the same character in every movie almost, so... I don't know. There are elements to it that I thought were okay, and I can totally see why you would want to make this movie, like as a director or as a studio even. Like, oh man, there's this movie where it's got like a built-in audience. It's a small one, granted, but it's a built-in audience. It's a sword and sorcery movie. You know, it's this mix of fantasy, and you've got all these kind of supernatural elements at play as well. You've got like a it's part pirate movie at times. It's part like Three Musketeers or something, where you've got like scenes where Conan is saving Rachel Nichols' character from a carriage, like on a runaway carriage, and these guys in the woods. It's got like this Robin Hood feel to it almost at certain points. So it's like a really great blending of a bunch of things that we've seen before. But I just, I don't know, I wasn't really that impressed with it. So, I don't know, those are kind of like my general thoughts. Was there anything in particular that you really enjoyed about it, aside from just like the general attitude of the character in the movie?
Yeah, Conan was a little inconsistent. I mean, I liked the origin story at the beginning. That kind of gave a little background, I guess, but not so much. It wasn't a Batman Begins kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, actually, I wrote down, sorry to interrupt, but I wrote down there was a Batman Begins moment when Ron Perlman is like fighting young Conan out in on the ice, and he like taps the ice and he falls through and says something about minding your footing. That's like directly out of Batman Begins. But
This movie didn't come out before Batman Begins?
No, Batman Begins.
Credit to Misspelled.
Batman Begins came out in 2005. This was 2005. So.
Okay, so about 6 years.
I don't do math, but yes.
Yeah, and, you know, he looks like an angry child. Whatever, you think he's going to be the strong, silent type. And then he's, like, goofing around with his friend in the next scene when they're older. I'm like, come on, Conan. You're supposed to... And then, like, the last part of the movie, he's, like, strong and silent, and he doesn't say anything to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, little inconsistencies there. Like, oh, super happy guy one moment, you know, kind of brooding and dark the next. It's like, what's switching this off here? Are you insane?
Just,
are you bipolar? What's happening here?
He just goes into, like, party mode where he goes to, like a Tortuga-esque island and just, like, gets drunk and bangs a bunch of chicks, but...
Right. I also like the idea of the mask, the super powerful mask. It kind of draws back ideas of The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. When you put it on, you get kind of possessed by something, which I think is pretty sweet, and then you have to, like, reconstruct it.
Okay.
Like, they separated the mask across the country. Like, that's just a good film. That's a good MacGuffin, if you will.
It is.
Deus Ex Machina. Something that, you know, hurdles the plot forward.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm using all those terms absolutely correct.
Definitely MacGuffin. I don't know about it, but...
Yeah, the violence, I think, is just enough where it's not grotesque. You're not appalled by it in any way. I mean, seriously, should you be appalled by it?
Right.
But it's, like, just enough where it's like, oh, man, that was pretty awesome. Or, you know, like, she uses, like, her metal claws to, like, taste blood and stuff. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, God, you need to go to, like, a medical clinic or something, because I'm
yeah.
I guarantee you're getting something.
Yeah.
I
agree. Yeah. I think... like, the grossest part to me was not beheadings or anything like that. It was when Conan slices off the guy's nose and then years later goes back and sticks his finger into the guy's hole.
That was pretty sweet.
Well, that was disgusting. And then I also really enjoyed how he made that guy swallow the key and then, like, turned the prisoners on him.
It was very Jigsaw-esque.
Yeah, it was.
Did the Saw movies take that from Conan the Barbarian?
Yeah,
pretty good idea. It's pretty novel.
Pretty sure they all came out post 2011. Yeah, that sounds about right. I also liked, since we're talking about things that I liked about the movie, the part where Conan beheads the guy, like the really annoying guy at that prison, and then he goes to gain access to Nose Man's room, and the guy, the really annoying guy, is like, he'll only let me in, or whatever. So Conan, off camera, slices off his head, and then back on camera, knocks on the door, holds the guy's severed head up to the lookout, peephole. The guy, like, makes the ID, and then he opens it, and then Conan's just standing there with the guy's severed head. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think he makes a noise, too. Like, he's holding the head up, he's like, hey, what's going on? The guy's like, okay, come on in, Phil.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's Conan!
Yeah. I really enjoyed how Conan basically punched a horse in the face with a giant chain.
Yeah.
That was pretty
awesome. Now, that Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks got that from this movie, right?
Keep doing it.
Can we get Dave on this?
Keep doing it.
When did Blazing Saddles come out, Dave? Check that out.
So,
yeah, no, I thought anytime you punch a horse, I fall in love with the movie. So if there's horse punching in The Hobbit, I'm gonna love it. I'm gonna love it, Ben.
Yeah.
Five movies that have horses getting punched. That's
I think we've right there. Come to the end of the things that I liked about this movie, though.
Man, it sounded like everything, though. You seem to have liked about 97% of the film.
I think you're putting percentages in my mouth there.
It's the weirdest phrase I've ever heard.
You've got parkour sand warriors that show up out of nowhere.
Oh, man, you love parkour.
Dude, listen, I think, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but you and I and a bunch of our friends, I'm going to say invented parkour before parkour was actually invented. We were running around doing stuff like that back in, you know, early 2000s. So, I have a certain love for it, but then when it became like the hip thing to do for studio heads to be like, oh yeah, we need some parkour in there, just throw that in there, because the kids like it, it's new, it's fresh, it's hip, whatever, that really pisses me off. And
did you ever get a chance to watch the new Punisher movie, like the recent Punisher movie?
You know, I didn't. Punisher Warzone. I remember you talking. Speaking.
Oh man, that was so sweet. Yeah. And there were like three guys or something that were like the parkour guys. Ugh. And whoever was directing it knew that like parkour was kind of overrated at that point.
Yeah.
So like the Punisher just blows them up in midair while they're like flipping over buildings. It's really sweet.
That sounds like a perfect kind of deconstruction of parkour and pop culture and its yeah. and its state now. So
the Punisher Warzone kind of makes fun of the movies that try to be really serious.
That's excellent.
While being really violent and really serious.
I need to see that. That was Lexi Alexander, the director.
It totally trumps The Dark Knight, Ben.
Don't even. As the director,
I think Nolan got some notes from Punisher Warzone.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, but I think Punisher Warzone got the parkour from Conan the Barbarian 2011.
All right, there you go. That makes total sense. The dialogue in this movie was really god awful. Live, I love, I slay, and I am content. And then he just bones Rachel Nichols right after that.
You need to cut one of those off. It's always got to be three. You got to name three. You got to let one of those go.
Yeah, I think content can probably go.
Yeah, put slay first, too. I slay.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that one. Just be like, I slay, and then bone.
And then there was the part where I actually laughed out loud at the screen because Rose McGowan who has this weird, like, incestuous thing going on with her dad, who's played by Stephen Lang in this movie, at one point says, like, if your plan to resurrect your wife, my mother, fails, and he's like, it won't. And she pauses for a second, and she goes, but if it does? And he goes, it won't. Like, it's just back and forth with them. I was like, wow, this is terrible, terrible writing.
That sounds excellent.
Rachel Nichols says at one point, I take instruction from no man, and then spends the entire movie taking instructions from Conan. It was like such a piss poor attempt to have like a not damsel in distress character put in there.
She
but
held her own on the pirate ship, I think.
She's totally a damsel in distress in this movie.
There's a couple instances where she kind of upkeeps herself. She kicks what's her name's ass into the fence post.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
She just goes, "Hey, die," and then kicks her.
Yeah, but like having your female lead like take place in take part in a couple of chintzy fight scenes here and there doesn't necessarily mean that like the core of the character is oh she's a warrior or whatever. I mean,
very much like Keira Knightley in the Pirates movies where it's like, oh gosh,
yeah,
why does she have to fight? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, yeah,
we get it.
So how about that octopus creature at the end? That was
pretty sweet.
We never even saw its face or like mouth or anything. It's just a bunch of tentacles coming around.
Right. You did see a little bit because one of the guys fell in and you saw the mouth like bite him in half.
Okay, I missed that.
Saw it very briefly, but you didn't see much. It was mostly just the tentacles. Which again, I think I wrote a comic where Aquaman forced Batman to fight the Kraken.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you recall this scene.
Vaguely.
Very similar to this. I think they may have you know what? I'm gonna say I got that from Conan the Barbarian.
There you go. I was wondering how you're gonna bring that one back.
Yeah, I thought that scene was pretty sweet. And again, this movie I think was intended to be in 3D, and went and saw it in 3D. And I thought it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, I don't really care for 3D movies. I think it's a really big gimmick, and I don't think every single movie should be in 3D. But certain movies can be, and and certain movies like this will kind of get me to pay the extra money for the. Oh, I get a discount anyway. So anyway, I'm a VIP.
Nice.
You get the 3D experience, and it's cool because not only does it look really sleek, again, dialogue terrible, acting's terrible, all that, it leaks, looks cool, and for 2 hours you get to go and kind of just see some tentacles fly across the screen.
Yeah,
like, but that's my Saturday. That's what I did this weekend.
And this movie is it's almost 2 hours long. It's like 1:52 or something, which seems way long for a movie like this that you've said countless times is like pretty simple. There's really no need for them to drag it out that long.
Sequel, and I'm wondering where they're going to go with it. I hope it's a completely new story. I don't think we need to come back to any events that happened in this one.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering what they're going to call it, Ben. Do you think you want to go with run through some titles as far as what the new Conan movie should be called?
I mean, in keeping with previous movies, they could obviously do Conan the Destroyer, right?
Obviously, but let's think of some original titles here. We already got a TV series called Conan the Adventurer.
Okay.
We got the comic series called The Savage Sword of Conan.
Okay.
So let's see, we could go Conan the Bone Barian. He likes to bone.
Yeah.
Conan the Slayer. Conan the Quester.
I was thinking maybe like Conan the Dragon Slayer, like just introduce dragons into the world just because they seem like they should be there, you know?
Sure, definitely. Conan the Cloud Rider, maybe we could get a little, maybe like some Falcor action in there.
Or yeah, like that little thing that Kit Cloudkicker used to use in Tailspin in the cartoon where he would have that little air foil that he would whip out and then go
Bear? Was that the little cub?
Yeah, he would like go surfing out of the back of the seaplane. It would just be Conan doing that with his giant sword. Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
You know what would really have been awesome?
What?
And this wasn't as fun a game as I thought it'd be. Because really, we really don't have any ideas prepared. Arnold Schwarzenegger should have taken on Conan's father's role.
Yeah,
than he should have probably planned for.
You know, I bet he probably would have at least had discussions about it if he wasn't in office at the time. Because I don't know if you're aware of this, but Schwarzenegger's trying to make an acting comeback now. He's been cast in like 4 or 5 different movies already.
Yeah, that's awesome, Ben.
Dude, he has lost every bit of goodwill that he once had in the 80s and 90s. I think he's
why? Because he's governor?
No, he's like 65 now, and he was never a good actor. The only thing
Stallone's making a comeback. He's just looking at Stallone and seeing how successful he is, and he wants the same thing.
But Stallone, that is also, and I'm going to say this as a big fan of Sylvester Stallone, that Stallone should stop too. Like both of those guys, that's just embarrassing what they're doing. Like
Rambo, John Rambo, Rocky Balboa, great films.
But
Expendables not so great. Expendables 2 is gonna be awesome. Because Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it, Ben.
Okay.
Yep. The ruling stands.
All right, we'll come back and talk about Expendables 2 after that movie hits theaters. But
freaking what's his name? Hellboy.
Yeah, Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman, great. I love him and everything. So he's a welcomed addition to the franchise, even though he, spoiler alert, fortunately doesn't make it.
Right. He's only in like the first 25 minutes or something. But
that was pretty awesome. It reminded me of another film, In the Name of the King or something like that. It was some really crappy Jason Statham, Ron Perlman, great Yoda fantasy movie directed by
Uwe Boll or something.
Uwe Boll, yeah. And I watched all of that, and it was shitty. But you know what? Sword and Sorcery, that'll get me every time.
Yeah,
Fire and Ice Man is going to be awesome when it comes into whoever's doing that. Zack Snyder? Zack Snyder?
Robert Rodriguez.
Oh yeah, that's right, Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think you just kind of summed it up right there. Like, Sword and Sorcery, that'll get you every time. I feel like if a movie like Conan the Barbarian kind of appeals to you without having to be convinced to watch it, then you're probably going to find a lot to enjoy with it. If you're somebody who's not necessarily like a hardcore fan of fantasy and sword and sorcery stuff, there are other better sword and sorcery movies to watch instead of this one, like Fire and Ice, like we've mentioned. But
well, that one has some shitty parts too.
It does, but I mean, I think
Fire and Ice is a lot emptier than this Conan the Barbarian film was too.
It is, but I would prefer it to be emptier instead of filled with garbage, you know, like stuff that we've seen a bunch before that's not really well executed. I would rather
Ben, you're looking for a thief. This is the city of thieves.
Yeah, there's
it's right in the title.
There's a lot of stuff like that in this movie. So yeah, I mean I would just say like you've probably watched it already if you're listening this far in, but if you haven't for some reason, I would say it's probably not worth your time. But that's you know, coming from somebody who doesn't love fantasy stuff. So, you know, Tyler obviously would say differently, I think.
I have an extreme loyalty to certain genres.
Indeed, indeed.
One of them is Sword of Sorcery.
All right, do you have any closing thoughts, or did that last sentence do it for you?
Check out Conan the Barbarian.
Okay. All right.
Dude, he lives in a time that's before written history. But after the sinking of Atlantis, so there's a movie right there, is discovering, or you know, falling into Atlantis in some aspect.
Yeah, Conan the Atlantean.
There you go, right there.
All right.
The main theme of all the movies is that Conan wants to be king of something. So he's kind of like Alexander the Great, where he's just trying to conquer everything.
Okay.
But he's just one man.
Yeah. Your last point reminded me that I can't believe I didn't mention this earlier. Morgan Freeman narrates this movie somehow. Like I
thought it might have been a Morgan Freeman impersonator.
I thought it was too. I honestly did, and I looked it up, and I had to look it up and make sure. But yeah, it was actually him. He got paid to do this, and he says like four or five lines in the movie. Like there's a section in the beginning where he kind of sets up the world, which is fine. I mean, it totally takes you out of it before you even have a chance to get in, because you're like, what the hell is Morgan Freeman doing in this movie? And then later on, like just one more time, he shows up like during a random fade to black.
Yeah.
And they're like, and Morgan Freeman just comes back on and like fills in a gap right here and there or something. And
he'll do anything for a paycheck,
I guess, but it was just kind of like, whoa.
Conan the Barbarian was born in Hyperborea.
I think also we should, before we like wrap up the discussion of this movie, just kind of give some props to this movie for the one thing that I thought it did do well to kind of differentiate itself was that opening sequence where it's like, you know, the first 20, 25 minutes where it's not Jason Momoa as Conan, it's the kid version. Yeah. I liked how they put him in the situation where he had to save his dad or whatever, like with the chains and the lava death and everything. I thought that was well done. I thought the egg game was kind of cool. That's a cool concept, although it was like really, really obvious what was going to happen as soon as he gets an egg. It's like, okay, they're, you know, he's going to do something crazy and then come back and defiantly show that the egg is still broken. But I still thought it was kind of a cool thing. And then, I just think, you know, like everything else in this movie, that the village plundering and all that stuff just looked like every other village plundering I've ever seen committed to movies. But I did like the execution of the beginning of the
village plundering is pretty simple. You go in and you plunder.
Yeah, but I mean, do like a POV from a sword or something. You know, like something cool.
Maybe some parkour.
Yeah. God.
Parkour on the huts while lighting them on fire.
You're missing the entire point.
POV from the sword. I thought we were being ridiculous. Sorry.
Something. No, I was serious. Like something that we've never seen. You know, because like it's such a tired thing. You've got thatched roof cottages that are being burned to the ground. Whoopee, whatever. You know, like the dirty women pulling children out of the street and
right.
You know, being wrangled up by faceless villains who scream in animal voices. Like it's so played out. But
you know, it was a good village plundering scene was in Rambo, John Rambo.
Okay.
People were like getting blown sideways.
Yeah. I remember that one. That was the one I think they like they forced people to run through like a minefield or something.
That was another scene, yeah.
Oh, a different scene. Okay.
This is when the missionaries were at the village, like, patching everybody up from the previous attack. Oh. And then they attack again.
Right, yes.
So all the missionaries pretty much eat the dust.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, yeah, I think that'll pretty much bring us to the end of our Conan discussion. Tyler, do you want to rev the Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Man, I have a great feeling about this pull right here.
All right.
I'm going to pull it right now. Ben, I hope you're a fan of Dwight Howard.
I am.
Because we're watching two films featuring his arch rival, former Magic superstar Shaquille O'Neal, in two of the greatest movies ever set to film, the fantasy epic Kazam and the superhero epic Steel.
Oh, wow.
Both starring Shaquille O'Neal. Kazam, available only on DVD through Netflix. Oh, excuse me, Kazam, did I say that?
Yeah.
Only available on DVD through Netflix. Steel, not available in any format through Netflix. Apparently shunned by the movie community. Don't know why. John Henry Irons is a badass character in comic books. Why wouldn't the movie be badass? But I believe you can find it in parts, possibly in its entirety, on YouTube. So, listeners, check it out there. Hopefully you know how to use YouTube after 7 years of existence. I'm hoping you figured out that site by now.
Right.
You know, just set up a playlist or something.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll be checking those out. I think we might have a special guest. And, of course, like we said at the beginning of the show, it will be live. Ben and Tyler of NJNM fame will be podcasting live, but not really.
Yeah, not necessarily live, just in the same place.
Let's just keep saying it's live. We'll just say NJNM right. Live.
We'll do it live.
We're doing it live. Screw it.
All right. Well, yes, you guys can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com or call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 with your thoughts on Kazam and Steel. That would be awesome. This is actually a double feature that Tyler and I have been looking forward to doing ever since the inception of this podcast. So it's been 2 years in the making.
Nice. Our 100th episode's coming up, too. So if you want to send us some well wishes via voicemail,
yep,
or even insult us via voicemail, start sending those in now. We'll save them up for our 100th episode. We'll play all those. All one of them, maybe, Ben?
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll celebrate the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, I like it.
A couple of Mike's Hards. Mike's Hards all around.
There we go. You guys can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Now, Tyler just noticed that our old the Not Just New Movies podcast feed in iTunes has been deleted, which is good because now that means if you go to the iTunes store and you just type in the Not Just New Movies podcast, ours should be one of the only options that you'll see. I believe it still has the title Geek Tyrant NJNM, but it's pretty easy to find through there. So, yeah.
The only thing unfortunate about that is we lose all of our positive reviews and stars.
That is unfortunate. So if you want to leave us one on our new feed, that would be great. You can also talk to us on Twitter. We are on Twitter at NJNM Podcast. And we do have one new Twitter follower, and that is at Rocco of Ages. So thanks for the follow there. And we do have email for this week, too. So I'm going to read this. This is from Rocco, a.k.a. at Rocco of Ages. All right, here we go. Rocco sent us an email last week. So he says, Rocco again, I have decided to, again, share my thoughts on a film that is completely off of everyone's radar. This week I watched, among other things, Danny Boyle's debut feature film, Shallow Grave. I've been a fan of Boyle ever since I saw Trainspotting, and due to its recent Criterion release, finally picked up Shallow Grave. The movie features Ewan McGregor in his first starring role, so if you're a fan of his, I would definitely recommend it. If you're not a fan of his, I would still recommend it, but I should also say that until you change your non-McGregor fan ways, we can't be friends. Shallow Grave delivers on all fronts. It's surprisingly hilarious for its subject matter, which is three roommates welcome a tenant who dies in his room. Under his bed, they find a briefcase full of money. They decide to bury him. I wonder if this has anything to do with the title, in the woods.
Ooh.
And yeah, Shallow Grave.
Yeah.
And bury him in the woods and keep the money. McGregor and Carrie Fox, their female roommate, are seemingly fine with their decision, but Christopher Eccleston's character is not okay with it. In fact, he starts sleeping in the attic and goes completely effing insane. I will not divulge any more information, but the movie is masterfully shot for a debut film and kept me thoroughly entertained throughout. I feel like I should, once again, pose a question to you guys. What is your favorite debut film from a filmmaker? Shallow Grave may now finish second to Reservoir Dogs for me. thanks again, from Rocco. So thank you for the email, Rocco. Tyler, I know this is kind of putting you on the spot. Do you have any particular directorial debuts that stand out in your mind?
Is Jaws a directorial debut?
No, Spielberg. He did Duel. It was a really small, might have even been made for TV movie.
All right. Well, if Jaws was Spielberg's directorial debut, that would have been the film I would have chosen. I don't know, man. Frank Capra, is he doing anything anymore? It's a Wonderful Life, one of his first films.
You know, I'm gonna look that.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, was that his?
Both of those are Frank Capra movies. I'm gonna look and see what his directorial debut.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, obviously, I don't want to go George Lucas because whenever he directs something, it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to think of who directs a lot of the Van Damme movies, but that doesn't really apply. So I'd probably go Spielberg. His first film in my mind, I guess, Encounters of the Third Kind. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right. There were a couple movies he made before that one, but it's okay.
Yeah. But Jaws is my favorite debut film from a filmmaker.
Totally not applicable, but works nonetheless. Thank you. No, I understand. I mean, putting anybody on the spot like that would be kind of tough. I actually read this email right before we started recording and pulled up an old article that I wrote on the Solar Sentinel called 12 Great Directorial Debuts That I've Seen.
Let's run through those.
Yeah, I'm going to really quickly. Nice. 1957, 12 Angry Men by Sidney Lumet, which is a really great courtroom drama. American Beauty in 1999.
Is that the one with Hazard Sose?
No, that would be The Usual Suspects, which we talked about and with Katie Rich in like episode 55 or something like that. Anyway, next up, American Beauty, Sam Mendes's directorial debut, Brick, Rian Johnson's directorial debut from 2006 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's like one of my favorite film noir movies, really awesome stuff. I was surprised at the time, I wrote this article in like 2008 or something, I was really surprised to know that, or to find out that The Maltese Falcon was John Huston's directorial debut, and that's a really awesome Humphrey Bogart movie. Citizen Kane, of course, the Orson Welles classic. Clerks from Kevin Smith is a good
one.
That's
a good one.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was Guy Ritchie's directorial debut. That one, I mean, Ritchie has like his own style and almost his own like subgenre of British crime films that all came in the wake of that one. Sophia Coppola did The Virgin Suicides in 1999. That was her first movie. I actually really liked that movie the one time I saw it. I need to rewatch it to see if I can kind of if I still hold to those assertions, but I liked it back then. And then Shawshank Redemption, shockingly, is Frank Darabont's directorial debut. This is an amazing movie and a really fantastic a fantastic filmmaking achievement, let alone somebody's directorial debut. That just kind of blows my mind. Gone Baby Gone.
Is that Bram Stoker's Dracula? Is that Coppola's first movie?
That was Francis Ford Coppola. I'm pretty sure that was in like the 90s, and he made Godfather and The Conversation in the 70s. So
okay.
I don't think so. He probably took all that from Conan the Barbarian 2011.
Yeah, Bram Stoker's Dracula takes a lot of things from Conan the Barbarian 2011. So.
Yeah. Gone Baby Gone was Ben Affleck's directorial debut in 07. That one was really great. And Serenity, Joss Whedon from 2005. Reservoir Dogs, of course, Rocco mentioned. And also... Mission Impossible 3 was J.J. Abrams' feature directorial debut. So there's a list of them for you guys there.
I like John Woo, too.
Yeah, I wonder what John...
I'm just trying to think of favorite directors now.
Okay, that has nothing to
do... John Woo's first movie, that's pretty good, right?
It's got to be.
No one questioned me on that. Dave, shut up over there.
I don't care if
it was a Jackie Chan movie that Jackie Chan wasn't really in.
All right, so yeah, I think that'll pretty much bring us to the end of...
Who's that director that does all those Tony Jaa movies?
Oh,
like the protector and
Hannah Prichinow or something like that.
That guy.
That's really butchering that name, but and Ungbok might be that person's directorial debut. So
that's a great movie.
Yeah. All right, good call. All right, so let's wrap up the character name game for this week. Mia Thermopolis.
Princess Diaries.
Yes, I also would have accepted the Princess Diaries
too.
Who? A royal engagement.
Royal engagement.
Yep.
I might have seen both of those.
Oh man.
Anne Hathaway is, she is hot.
Indeed, and
she's got a nice, beautiful, intelligent brain too. So don't just think I'm all about looks.
Of course, Anne Hathaway starring in The Dark Knight Rises, which is out in theaters now. And
how did that film do? That do pretty good? $160 million, is that all right? I don't know.
Yeah, that's like the third best of all time. So
I mean, think about our sponsorship dollars here at the podcast. I mean, that pales in comparison to what we make over here.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like two bills every year or something?
Two ones, yeah, that we find on the streets.
I meant billion, but thanks for breaking the spell.
All right, well, let's go back and forth and tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
Yeah, you can find me at the Twitter handle NJNMPodcast. You can find me at the SolarSentinel.blogspot.com, where you'll see hashtag Shimply Skyfall, the new James Bond meme that apparently they wanted, and they wanted to award me a poster for it. Didn't get the win, though.
Oh.
So call your local representative and complain to, I don't know, Saltzman and Broccoli's production company. I think they're both dead.
Right.
And you're gonna find me in Los Angeles next week, so
all right.
Physically you're gonna find me there. I won't tell you exactly where. I might be at the local YMCA.
Right.
Because I need, you know, a place to stay and work out.
There you go. All right, well, you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustthemovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. Music for this episode comes courtesy of the Conan the Barbarian 1982 score from a song called Anvil of Crom, just because I liked the sound of that better than any of the music in the 2011 version. So,
a Vulcan Rain hit?
I don't. No, I'm not entirely certain what you're referencing there.
That's okay.
But we'll go out on
high note. James Earl Jones was awesome in that movie.
As always. Yeah, that movie was on TV the other day, and we watched just a couple seconds of it, and James Earl Jones has such a ridiculous haircut in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty crazy. So, yeah, Kazam and Steel for next week, guys. So that is going to be one for the ages right there.
Grab your crunch, people. We're going to have a good time.
Indeed. And we look forward to welcoming Tyler to the City of Angels. So look forward to that. And feel free to shoot us a voicemail or an email if you want to talk about any of the things that we've talked about before on this podcast or any of the ones that we're going to be talking about next week. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys later.